This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off the replacement training bundle.
I am quite a creative person. I'm a textile student at the moment, final year. And I guess for me, it all started when I was about 11 years old. I used to get quite anxious because I didn't know how to process my emotions properly. And somewhere along that came with kind of like fiddling with my eyebrows. And I think like a few of them had come out naturally. And I kind of got into this headspace where I thought that that was a good thing. And you're supposed to quite like, you know, groom it with your fingers, maybe like tease out a couple. And as all of the ones that, you know, easily came away, I started pulling at the ones that weren't ready to come out yet. I think it just kind of like the repetitive movement really soothed me. And then that progressed onto pulling hair predominantly from my eyebrows and eyelashes. I've gotten a lot better now over time, quite a few years later, where I don't really pull at my eyelashes anymore. Occasionally at the eyebrows, but generally I've kind of moved on to more leg hair at the moment, just because it's very fine, you can't really see it, and also it's kind of something that's a bit more naturally groomed, I guess, like more socially acceptably groomed. So yeah, I'd say it's gotten better. Not like by a great deal, but better in its own way.
How old were you when you figured out that there was a name for this behavior you were doing?
About 12 years old, I kind of realized that it was a proper condition, but I don't really think it sunk in until about like 17, to be honest. And like 18 was when I figured out there was an actual name for it and what that name was. So it did take a long time from kind of like diagnosis to me being able to actually understand it.
When you found out the name, was there a sense of relief knowing that, hey, I'm not the only one?
A little bit. I mean, I always kind of thought it wasn't as common as it actually was until just the last year. So even when I found out that there was like a terminology and other people had this very specific condition, it kind of, I don't know, it was kind of relieving, but also I kind of thought that there would be so widespread that I was still quite alone, but turns out it's not, so that's great.
Did you ever meet anybody in real life that also had a BFRB?
Yeah, after doing my project over the last year, just being able to like talk a bit more openly about it to more people, I found that a couple of my close friends actually also have it. It's just that none of us have ever talked about it before. So it was quite interesting to see that not only are there other people in my like the same sort of community where I live, but I'm actually quite close to them already. So it was quite nice in a way.
Tell me about you wanting to do this project. How did you get into textiles and share everything about that? Because it's really super fascinating. I love it.
Okay, well, I kind of fell into textiles. I never really went out going, oh yes, I'm going to be a textile designer. I actually applied for fashion. However, when I sent through my portfolio to get into the university, they suggested that I'd apply for design for textiles instead. So I did that, middle of COVID, kind of going through the clearing, not really knowing what I wanted to do with my life, managed to get into this university course and went, yeah, okay, I'll give it a go and see what it's all about. And ended up kind of falling in love with it. I've always been a practical person, always needed to keep my hands busy, obviously, to stop the habits. But that kind of turned into being more craft orientated and really loving art and design. And since textiles is quite a hands-on process, like it's a lot of physical sketchbook work, finding different textures, working with different medias, it was really interesting. I really enjoyed it. And then it kind of progressed into specializing in weave design. I think it's because I also quite enjoy the mathematical side of it. It's all quite, you know, you've got one formula, you put in the numbers, it comes out something else, and you can kind of play around with that to create art that's also usable, which is quite cool in my opinion. So over the last year or so, I've been kind of honing my weaving skills, playing around with texture and pattern design, and was even part of a project with Huntsman on Savile Row back in 2023. We were creating men's suiting fabrics, which was quite incredible to be able to work with them. So all these skills have been kind of leading up to my final honours project, and they're always really interesting and really fascinating. So you kind of want it to be something big because this is like everything you've been working up for. And I wanted to make it a bit more personal to me. So over the summer, in between my third and my final year, I was just trying to think of like all these different ideas, just throwing them out there to see if it'd be something that one would be quite interesting to explore, but also something that I wouldn't get bored of because I've got a very short attention span. So having to work on a project for about 3 months is one thing, and then having to work on one for about six is completely different. And then I kind of got thinking about weave structures and certain things, and when I'd fix fabric, sometimes you had to like pull certain yarns out just because it wove it twice, and all of that. I kind of went, ooh, that actually quite satisfied my urge to like, pick at my eyebrows and like pulling out hair. It was really interesting. And I kind of went, well, why shouldn't I try and make some fabrics for other people like me and see if it's actually something that people would like? So I got talking to my mum's friend who also has something similar. She quite enjoys pulling feathers out of cushions, and it's like an uncontrollable urge. She just has to do it. And I kind of went, oh, well, I could translate that sort of urge into a textile that is meant to do that and still leave behind a fabric that is usable. So that's where the project kind of started. And over time, I started exploring more and more textures, really getting into what makes it so appealing, whether it be feasible to do, how sustainable it was, because once you pulled out the yarn, you kind of want it to be able to biodegrade. You don't really want it to lo loads of little plastic bits everywhere. It's not great, is it? So I did a little survey with a few people that I knew with some little fabric samples that I did in different materials and basically documented it. And that was kind of the final hand in, was showing all these different results, exploring the textures, having several different samples that work quite well that could potentially become a final product, like a cushion or a scarf that people can have with them that is kind of an everyday item, but isn't so noticeable when you actually start pulling out of it. So it was really, really interesting to do that. And I do hope that that's not the end of the journey because I think it's quite a cool and interesting project that might be able to help quite a lot of people.
Was this the first time that you were open publicly about your trichotillomania mania, or had you shared about it before?
I think this was the first time I've been properly publicly open. Yeah. A few other times I've like confided in close friends, partners, that sort of thing. But this was the first time that other people knew about it. People like lecturers, just random classmates, other people in the general public. So yeah, first time.
Were you nervous to share, or was this kind of like, hey, I'm ready now, like I'm ready to do this?
I think I'm still quite nervous, to be honest, because at that point, I was still kind of thinking, oh, I'm just going to be like one in a million sort of thing. There's not going to be many other people that have it. But as again, as I opened up to more and more people, the more people I found who were also like myself. So yeah, at first very nervous, but grew with confidence after each person I told. So it was quite cool.
You mentioned that some of your best friends have it. When that moment came to be, and you were like, hey, we all, you know, that Spider-Man meme. Hey, we all have this. How did that positively, impact the relationship? Were you able to be accountability partners for each other?
Yeah, sort of. So a couple of them I don't see very often just because we don't live in the same sort of parts of the country. But it was kind of one of those moments of like, oh, well, great, you can help me out with this project. We get to kind of like tell each other about what we do, why we find it satisfying, kind of having someone else that you can relate to has been quite nice. Yeah, I wouldn't say that we kind of like monitor each other though. It's kind of more of a each to their own, you do you sort of situation. But yeah.
I know the term accountability partner and even the idea of having one. Some people don't like it. Like me personally, I'm not loving an accountability partner. But I know that some people do. So it's always interesting to hear, like, hey, do you like when people check in or do you not?
No, I have to say, I don't like having an accountability partner. I remember my parents used to do it when I was younger, and I hated it because, like, as soon as they called it out, it just made me want to do it even more. So I quite like to find my own little methods of coping.
Have you found, like, what is the most satisfying type of thread or yarn that you use to make
Oh.
these?
Okay, so I did experiment with a bit of horse hair, like the horsetail hair. However, when you're working on a wide loom, it's really hard to keep inserting by hand each individual hair. So while that was the most successful, because it is literal hair, so it's got the exact right textures and just everything that makes you want to pull it. However, it was so time consuming that I probably would have had to spend the whole semester making like a meter of fabric, which most people do within like a couple of hours. So very frustrating. However, it's not very sustainable, but I did manage to find that monofilament, so like plastic basically, also imitated that effect. So basically, I want to kind of experiment with the horsehair to see if I can spin it into a continuous yarn that would still have the same qualities as just individual hairs would have. However, I haven't really had much time or resources to kind of explore that yet. So I think that might be what I'm doing this summer, basically.
Besides, having moments where, hey, I'm working, I'm with the loom. You said it's time consuming, so that's a lot of time for your hands to be busy. What are some other things that you do to keep your hands busy?
Well, since university, I've mostly just been the loom these last couple of years. However, in summer, so during summer 2023, I was actually on an internship on an alpaca farm nearby. And we got basically the whole internship was just to learn about hand processing fibers into textiles. And we got to work with all sorts of like alpacas, sheep. That was really great, really, really great. And there I learned how to do drop spinning, which is just turning fiber into yarn by hand without a big wheel. So I think spinning at the moment has been something that's really kept my hands busy because you're constantly working with hair-like fiber and you're kind of making something that you can then use afterwards. I also do knitting and a lot of other textile crafts. So one of the things that I've been quite into at the moment is upcycling drinks can pull tabs into dresses and wearable garments, and they've been in a couple of fashion shows at the end. Basically, I find the process of, well, one, pulling the tabs off the cans very satisfying, but also sometimes the little middle bit still gets caught in it, so you have to kind of wiggle that part out. And I find that I quite like processing those as well. Just a nice kind of repetitive motion to kind of stop from the other repetitive motion.
When you were younger, pulling from your eyebrows and eyelashes, did you have moments where people asked you, hey, where are your eyebrows? Where are your eyelashes? Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today.
Since that happened when I was in like primary school, so I'm not entirely sure what that would be in America, but I think elementary, since it was so long ago and I was in such a small little community, I don't remember many people asking when it was really bad, when I literally had like no eyebrows or eyelashes. But I think that's because the teachers were quite good at like setting the kids down and going, so this person's going through this, maybe don't mention whatever. So, I think that helped a lot. Luckily, before I went to high school, it did get better. So, for a while, it just looked like I had really thin eyebrows and eyelashes, which was fine. I mean, it wasn't great, but it was a bit more normal anyway. So, I didn't really get many people asking. And unless, like, they knew, they didn't really know what they were looking for. So, yeah, I don't think I actually encountered too much bother myself.
Because of that, did you ever feel the need to cover things up?
Yeah, a little bit. I remember so vividly when I was like 12 years old, it used to be such a big craze to do the massive block eyebrows. So I never actually went that far because I always thought they looked a bit ridiculous, but it did make me a bit more conscious about filling in my eyebrows. Maybe not over-exaggerating, but just filling in the little spaces just to make them look a bit bushier than they actually were.
And when you were that age, did you try things to stop yourself from pulling?
Yeah, I can't quite remember what I did. I know that my parents had like a bribe system where they got one of those like big like 5 pound tubs of sweets or something, which back then was the mother load. It was amazing. So they kind of used that to bribe me, going like, well, if you can, last like three months or something without doing it, then you'll get like the whole tub. And I remember that that kind of helped with the severity of it. I did get better, but it wasn't a very long-term solution, to be honest with you. I also remember clear mascara, obsessively putting that on my eyelashes because I think I remember my mum saying that it would help them grow faster. So instead of pulling them out, I'd like obsessively put clear mascara on them, which I think it kind of helped in a way because it's still the repetitive motion near like the eyebrows, eyelashes. I now know now, but like that, yeah, it was not gonna happen. But 12-year-old me was a bit desperate, so that's fine.
If you can remember going through those moments of being pull less, maybe not pull free, but you mentioned, everything's kind of growing back. Was there anything that changed during that time, or it just kind of happened?
Well, I think I moved schools. I moved schools kind of during high school to a completely new area. And I think around that time, even though I was the new kid, I don't know why, I just felt a lot more at home at the new place. Still sad I left like quite a few friends behind at the first high school, but there was just something about like the environment of the second one and where we now lived, which is in the middle of nowhere, where I started to get a bit more self-confidence. And even though I still was pretty anxious until I was around 17, it helped a lot. Like the symptoms got less. I think I also started biting my nails a bit more, so I couldn't actually physically pull the hairs out. So I have noticed that while I bite my fingernails more, I pull less, but when I pull more, I bite my fingernails less. So it's kind of like substituting one for the other. So I think those two factors kind of have influenced it mostly.
That was my next question was, have you experienced other BFRBs, even besides nail biting?
A little bit of spot popping, a little bit. More like whiteheads or ingrown hairs, to be honest, just leading off of like the pulling. But I think that's the full extent, to be honest.
After you had moments of things growing back in, when that happened to me, I found myself being like, nice, I'm cured. This is it. This is great. Then I relapsed. Did you have a similar situation?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, in the first few years, I did that a lot. I would like overpluck and then leave them alone. And once they started growing, it was great. And then all of a sudden, something would tip it off again and all the progress would be undone. So, yeah, definitely had that.
When those moments did happen, what was your self-talk like? How did you talk to yourself kind of through this relapse?
I mean, since I was younger, I was quite a bit more self-critical. There was a lot of like naming and shaming going on. Yeah, I was very, yeah, I put myself down a lot, to be honest, in those pep talks. And while it did sort of help, it also made it a lot worse. So I think at a certain point when I had a much better like mental space overall, just became a bit more like, oh no, you've got this girl, a bit more self-positive and going, yeah, no, it's fine. Even if you do a little bit now, you're better in the long run. Like, yeah, definitely got a bit more confident myself. So it got better.
Do you have any locations, whether it's, somewhere in the house or like in the car, that you find are more triggering for you than other locations?
I have to say, like, doing a test, like exam situations, definitely does make it a lot worse. Or if I'm just like in a state of having to focus a lot, so studying in the library, just things that where I need to actually focus on something, but I can't necessarily have like the drum of a TV or an audiobook on because I forgot my headphones. Just little situations like that where I think, yeah, the background noise of the repetitive motions, it definitely kind of hones in the focus. I think home is more of a safe space, to be honest, than a trigger. And I can drive, and not many people I know can drive. So cars are a bit out of the equation at the moment. I definitely think like studying spaces.
Comparing your relationship with your BFRB to, when you were younger to now, how would you say it has changed?
I think when I was younger, it was like, I don't know, like a massive crushing weight. Like it'd be such a predominant part of my life, whether it be worrying what like other people were seeing on the street, like with the no eyebrows, eyelashes sort of thing, to kind of beating myself up, but over the pulling. So then it would like, turn into a really vicious cycle of depression, beating myself up, and then pulling, and then cycling back around. Meanwhile, it kind of grew into a bit more of a background noise as time went on. So it's not exactly something that I think about a lot anymore. It still comes up from time to time when I get quite stressed, but I think it's a lot more manageable. And especially after doing my project last year, I think that's helped it a lot and for myself to kind of come to terms with it a bit more. So I do think I'm kind of in the process of getting closure from it. So I'm hoping it'll get a lot better soon.
During your experience with trichotillomania, had you ever sought out help, whether a therapist or other mental health professional?
I mean, when I was younger, my parents took me to the doctor and they gave me some therapy. It was interesting. I don't think I got a lot out of it, but it was interesting to go. I found that it actually made me not want to talk about like my emotions and feelings a lot more. And I think that's maybe why I'm quite self-reliant now, and I don't really like burdening people with, hard emotional stuff because I don't know what it was about the therapist. I just really didn't like it. So I don't know if it was just therapy in general or that specific therapist. But yeah, they were the only one that I went to specifically for trich. But I've been to other ones in the past as well for other things. But I think that was the only one that I specifically went to see about that because I didn't think it was that big of a deal, to be honest, until like a couple of years ago. So
I remember in my experience, we went to many, many therapists to try to get some help for this, and so many didn't know what it was. And so I was like discouraged. I'm like, I don't even want to go to you. Like, I don't want to have to explain it to you. I want you to know already. And so I found myself going to therapy like for other things. And I'm not even bringing up the trick because you're not going to know.
No, I didn't even know that like the doctors still knew about it until I had to get like a copy of my medical record for getting a visa. And when I saw it on there, I was like, oh, okay, that's still a thing. Right, okay. So whenever I've been like through them to get like an appointment with like a therapist or something for this, that, or the other, then they could actually see it was on there. But again, just never really wanted to bring that side of it up. So
What is something you wish people knew about BFRBs?
I guess like it's not always about willpower. Yes, I know it's a habit and everyone's going like, oh, if you just have the mental capacity and strong will to do it, you can just stop anything. But it's not that simple. You've got to kind of like deconstruct why you want to do it, why it kind of comforts you as well. Again, even though the nail biting, a lot of people do it and it's a bit more socially acceptable, so there's still kind of a bit of stigma about it. People are like, oh, horrible, like chewed nubs sort of thing, which is horrific. But yeah, it doesn't quite help when you've got like that negative image. So yeah, I guess like it's not always that easy to overcome. And sometimes society doesn't exactly help too much, even when they have the best intentions.
Yep, I can't tell you how many times. Just stop. What? Duh. Okay.
I was like, oh, have you ever tried stopping? It's like, oh, no, thank you for suggesting
We're
that.
cured. We're cured forever.
Oh.
What are your thoughts on the idea of striving to be pull-free?
I mean, I used to think that you could be pull free as well. And I know some people, I mean, I don't know them personally, but I know some people have become pull free or they haven't done it in years. And I guess like some people can achieve it, but at the same time, I feel like you've got to accept that it you might not fully get rid of it, even though you might have stopped like pulling the hair from your head or your eyebrows or eyelashes, you are kind of replacing it with something else. So what if that might be a healthy habit, or it might be what I'm doing with just like replacing it with another BFRB. So, I mean, technically you can be pull free, but I don't think you really are at the end of the day. But I just don't think it's a realistic expectation for most people. Like, even though I don't pull massive chunks out of my eyebrows and eyelashes anymore, I will still get the one or two that are really annoying me. And oh, I will with it's happened with some other family members. They've got like one or two that are just out of place, and you just get this urge, but you know you can't because it's someone else's face. But yeah, so like even though I've gotten a lot better and I don't necessarily do it as much, I'm not pull free. I'm just not.
What is something that you would like to share with the listeners? Maybe some words of wisdom.
Just keep doing what is helping you. Don't let like anyone else's perspective of progress kind of blur yours just because they can't necessarily see it. They're not there every second of like the day. They can't see the whole journey. So literally just small victories. That's all you can really do.